You're listening to the Youth Critic Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
Baby, it's time to let the old ways die. It takes a lot to change, man. Hell, it takes a lot to try.
You know, man, in the old days, I always knew, like, you were gonna do something, that you'd be all right. It's the first time I'm worried about you.
Can I ask you a personal question?
Okay.
Tell me something, girl.
Do you write songs or anything?
I don't sing my own songs.
Why?
I just don't feel comfortable.
Why wouldn't you feel comfortable?
Almost every single person has told me they liked the way I sounded, but that they didn't like the way I look.
I think you're beautiful.
I'm falling.
Hey.
What?
I just want to take another look at you.
Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I'm your host, Kel Smith. I'm here with David Weiser. Is that it?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. From Film Assessment. And David, say hi to everybody.
Hi.
And today we are going to be talking about A Star Is Born, and then we're going to talk a little bit at the end about First Man, but we'll just focus a little bit more on Star Is Born since I kind of already talked about it. But first things first, let's just get on to A Star Is Born. So, David, there's been four different versions of A Star Is Born. Have you seen any of the other versions?
No, I have not seen any of the previous ones.
Me either.
I still haven't seen either any of them, except for the most recent one.
Me neither. So we both went in cold, not really knowing the gist of the story. But David, what did you think about this version of A Star Is Born?
I liked it quite a bit. It's probably one of the better films to come out so far this year, but it's not one of my favorite per se. But I did really like it, and the soundtrack was amazing.
Yeah, I agree. For me, this was kind of an emotional movie because it shouldn't really work. Because I mean, we should know this kind of story or the beats of it by now, because it's basically the boy meets girl, boy, you know, rises girl to stardom. They have a tizzy, and then, you know, shit goes tits up. It's that kind of story, but I feel like Bradley Cooper adds a whole other level with, you know, with what he does with Jackson Maine, and the character and what he says about the relationship between Jackson and, what's Lady Gaga's character's name?
Allie, I believe.
Allie. Okay. What he says, what I think, you know, he's trying to say is what, you know, what addiction does and what, you know, it does to relationships and, you know, and what it, you know, meant to someone, you know, what one relationship meant to someone versus their own like star power or their own stardom. And I think that for me, that angle, you don't really kind of get your head around it till the last 30 minutes of the movie. But when you start figuring out like what the movie really is about, it's kind of, it gets more and more heartbreaking and devastating.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But my general thoughts are, when Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper get on stage for the first time, I mean, that was very well built up. And everything else kind of really was well done. But to not jumble too much around, what are your more extensive, like non-spoiler general thoughts on the movie?
I mean, I was really impressed with Bradley Cooper as a director. I mean, I obviously knew he was an excellent actor, and he does an incredible job with that as well, with his performance. It's one of the best I've seen this year. And I was also really impressed with him as a singer. So that was something that stood out to me, him behind the camera, and another side of him that we haven't seen in front of the camera. And then Lady Gaga, I mean, this role really plays to her strengths. So like the singing and everything is, and the, all that is definitely something she's already like proven herself. But in terms of acting ability, I was pretty impressed with what she had to display.
Yeah. I mean, what I generally liked about, you know, them two is together, Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga, is even though the movie itself kind of jumps ahead a lot in terms of their relationship, like we never really get a sense of how long they've been in the relationship. Like this whole thing could have happened in the span of 1 month or a year or two. We don't really know for sure, but
I think it skewed a little more on the longer side, because I think it was kind of implied that she wasn't like that Ally wasn't really like an overnight sensation per se, but like her rise did take a little more. It seemed to me like it took a little more time than like a month or so. That was the vibe I got from.
Okay. But even then, you know, timeline wise, we still don't get to see a lot of like how they just, it kind of just keeps jumping forward in that, you know, like every like 5-10 minutes, they hit another milestone in a relationship, like their first date or getting on stage together, or 10-15 minutes later, they're getting married.
Mm-hmm.
But even despite that, despite all that, you still buy that they've been in a long-term relationship and they do love each other. Like the performance still is still compelling despite that.
Oh yeah, definitely. The pacing was a little wonky, but everything else makes up for it.
Yeah. And honestly, I mean, this is a great directorial effort from Cooper. I don't know if it would be, if I would say it's worthy of like a best directing Oscar, but I would be, you know, but I mean, this is a really good first shot out of the gate as a director.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because I mean, Cooper is juggling a lot here, not just as an actor, director, writer, producer, but I mean, performance wise, he has to craft Jackson Maine, you know, in a very authentic and believable way that he is like this country rock star. And also, you know, as someone who's dealing with, you know, the history, and he has to dealing with, you know, a very, you know, not to say tragic, but a very, you know, messed up history that he has to kind of, you know, keep up in his head, and he has to, you know, keep in character a lot. And it's much more compelling than say, and I really did like this movie. It's a little bit more compelling than something like James Franco's The Disaster Artist last year. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, Franco is kind of doing a really great imitation, but you don't feel the history, you don't feel the everything that's in there that Cooper brings to Jackson Maine as a performance.
Oh, yeah.
And while he's having to keep that in, he's having to direct everyone else who's also everyone else is giving really good performances.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, it's so he's juggling a lot in a very ambitious way. So I appreciate him doing. So I appreciate him a lot. I don't know if it's all completely worthy of a director, best director Oscar, maybe a nomination, but not necessarily a win, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about a lot of the elements in this film, aside from like original song. I think it's a shoe-in for a win there, at this point in the year at least. But everything else is kind of like, oh, it definitely should get nominated there for craft, all the different technical areas. I can see it's getting some nods, and then definitely actor, actress. It's probably going to get a Best Picture nom. I wouldn't be surprised if Bradley Cooper gets nominated either.
I think he'll win. I think he's almost a lockdown for Best Actor, though.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, of the performances, really the only... I mean, I've only... At this point in the year, I feel like the only, like, Oscar-caliber awards types of performances I've seen, really, are him and Gosling. Gosling and First Man, that is. Everything else, it's like, I haven't really seen anything leading actor-wise that has, like, wowed me on that level yet.
Same, but I would also put a little shout-out to Lakeith Stratfield for Sorry to Bother You and David Riggs for Blindspotting. But yeah, I mean, we're just now getting into stuff that will be, you know, talked about for Best Actor.
Yeah, the real glut of award seasons kind of just began, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm almost confident to say on this podcast, even though the Oscars is, what, end of February?
I looked it up either today. It was either earlier today or like last night or something. It was like February 24th.
Okay. Well, I can kind of predict on the 24th. I think Bradley Cooper will win Best Actor. But then again, I'm always terrible about these predictions, but I think for Best Actor, he's at least a locked in.
Yeah, for a nom, for sure. I mean, I don't like predicting wins this early because it's kind of like I need to see other things first.
Oh, yeah. But
prediction-wise for, like, nominations to say, like, oh, I think that could definitely pick up something or will be recognized in some capacity.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and I hope other actors get nominated this year. I mean, there's still so much out there that we haven't seen yet. You know, I mean, even on the TIFF side of things, we still, outside of the whole TIFF stuff, we still haven't seen anything from, we still have no word on Vice or Welcome to Marwen or, or The Mule, which, I mean, I don't know if The Mule will get anything, but, you know, but, I mean, Warner Brothers gave it a December release for some reason, so.
And then Clint Eastwood, that kind of, like, prestige associated with him, might get it in there. We never,
yeah.
I mean, it hasn't, I don't even think it's screened yet, so who knows.
Well, I mean, they're just, it's funny because they just wrapped filming on the movie in August, and there's already like word that it's pretty much almost finished.
Oh, wow. So,
yeah. Yeah. I'm like, I mean, that Clint Eastwood, he moves quick.
Yeah. Especially at his age. Like that's really impressive.
Yeah. I hope it's a good movie. So we'll see. But going back to this, so I kind of have to ask you, if you did have to pick what would be like the nominated song, what would it be? What would it be for you that would be the nominated song for this one?
Probably Shallows, but I wouldn't be surprised if it pulls a La La Land and snags two nominations in the Best Original Song category. I don't know what the other song would be, but I can see it maybe getting a second nomination.
I can see Shallow, but I mean, as a dark horse, I could definitely see I'll Never Find Love Again.
Oh, yeah, that one seems like that would be a pretty strong contender, but I feel like Shallows is the one that's going to be pushed harder by the studio, maybe. And it's also the one they released as a single. I think it's in like almost all the trailers. It's my personal favorite on the soundtrack. And so like, I feel like all that kind of blend together, at least for my personal taste, it seems like that's that perfect storm that seems like that's going to be what is going to be pushed and campaigned for. Although I'm sure with a soundtrack this good, I wouldn't be surprised if they like levy other of the a couple of the other like heavy hitting songs as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll just have to wait and see.
We will. I mean, it's a good soundtrack, so we'll see. And there's, I mean, I don't think there's any original songs coming out of Bohemian Rhapsody, but I don't know.
I don't know. I'm not certain either, but it seems like it's all Queen, all previously established Queen music, as mm-hmm. far as I know. I believe it's all recorded. It's all recorded by. It's just the Queen recordings that they're lip syncing to, is what I've heard. I'm not
right. Sure. Hmm. Yeah, I think so. I mean, maybe someone will do a tribute song at the in the end credits, but that's all I. But I mean, I don't know anything else about Bohemian Rhapsody, so.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to get into spoilers?
Sure.
So with spoilers, so just to, I don't want to jump to the end, but I know. Okay, I'll do it. The jump to the end. So Jackson Maine kills himself, and the ending of the movie is, it's Ali singing a tribute song to him, and the whole and everything about that song is just like note after note. It's just heartbreaking, and everyone in the theater cries with you.
Mm-hmm.
For me, what I loved about the last 30 minutes, because I up to the last like 30 minutes, like really up to the Grammys, I kind of just liked how everything was kind of. I really just liked how, you know, you could see kind of the jealousy of Jackson Maine, of him trying to, you know, overcome it because he still loves her, but he's kind of like, you know, like overwhelmed, you know, that he's even overwhelmed that, you know, she's, you know, getting a bigger spotlight than him. And, but really the last 30 minutes is so key to the movie because you get to the point in the last 30 minutes where you realize Jackson Maine is already like tainted his whole career. He's tainted his whole life, everything that he is and everything he will be, you know, everything that he is and everything he will be is right now at this moment, right as he's in rehab. Like mm-hmm. he has Ali, but even Ali is, you know, basically giving
preoccupied.
Yeah. Well, not even preoccupied. Like she's getting to the point where, you know, she wants to be in love. She wants to spend more time with Jackson, basically mm-hmm. putting her whole career on hold to wait for his career to kind of get a second wind when will never happen.
Yeah.
Okay. So go ahead.
Okay. Oh, I was going to let you finish. I don't really know what I had to add to that. I was just kind of agreeing with you.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah. So in the most heartbreaking, but maybe like it's weird because how we think of suicide, but in a weird way, this movie, like it builds perfectly up to that suicide because you understand when he does it, why he did it. You understand that, you know, that Jackson's putting it together that, you know, in order for her to fully, you know, grow more as a musician, as an artist, he has to take himself out of the picture.
Mm.
And the more tragic part is he felt like he had to do it through suicide rather mm. than break up or through other means.
Yeah, like that. Well,
go ahead.
I don't think it was entirely like I think it was kind of a lot of things. I think it was just like the like alcoholism and addiction like weighing on his soul. Like he was already suicidal, given what he tells his brother in that conversation, or was it then, or did he tell Allie about the suicide? Something like along those lines, about what he was talking about, trying to hang himself on the ceiling fan with the belt and then the ceiling fan fell down.
I think that was his rehab coach.
Okay. That's okay. That must have been what it's been like 2 weeks since I saw it. So I'm trying.
Yeah.
I remember it was kind of foreshadowed there. And then like in the very beginning, when he gets into the car, he drives by a billboard with some nooses. My friend pointed that out to me afterwards. It was like a rainbow billboard with like several nooses. And so it's like foreshadowed throughout. And it's this idea to me that like he was already going to kill himself, but like, I'm not sure it was entirely for Allie. I think it was kind of a lot of him feeling like he was inferior. He wasn't worthy of having that life and like being having a family with her and all of that. I think it was kind of, it seems like to me, like there's like a lot of ways you can interpret this, and it's meant to be that way because it's not really, you don't really dive into his headspace there. You just watch him commit the act. And as it's happening, like you're just like, oh, wait, what is happening? And then it just happens and you're just like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, I would even say from my kind of my subjectivity, it's the way I look at it is it's his depression basically overcoming him and overpowering him. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, one of the effects of alcoholism or really addiction in general is it comes with its own depression. And I think in that moment, he was very much worried about everything starting up again and everything, and even dragging Allie even more, because in the first time Allie and Jackson see each other after like Grammys and his commitment to rehab, I mean, he like absolutely breaks down in tears, apologizing for the Grammys, for embarrassing her. Yeah. And so I think he was already starting to, you know, get it in his head that, so I think he was already getting it into his head that, you know, if there was ever a moment to where he was thinking he had to humiliate her, or he was going to humiliate her again, he was going to take himself out of the picture. And I think that's what we were, and I think that's the true heartbreak of the movie, is that he had to take himself out. But also the other side of the heartbreak is Allie did everything she could, and she even in a weird way owes her, she kind of sort of owes him. What?
She owes her fame to him. Is that where
you go? Or she feels that, you know, she kind of feels a debt, but she also, in her own way, she loved him. She was like by his side the whole time. She let him go through the rehab and let him on his own, you know, clear his head, clear his addiction, and, you know, and still became a supportive wife afterwards. And for her to go through it all and then ultimately still lose him and ultimately come to the reality that, you know, she'll never get to, you know, she'll never get to say goodbye. She'll never get to do any, you know, do anything, you know, that, you know, to help her, you know, cut the relationship off. Like that's the other side of the tragedy, is that, you know, while in the long run, it was probably maybe good that that he's out of the picture, but for her to rise. But on the other side, she will always be hurt by that love. She will always be hurt by, you know, the person that Jackson made her to be, or that made her feel. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's the real tragedy of the story, is no matter what, Jackson was always going to do what he was going to do. And ultimately he chose to take himself out in that, to take himself out to save, to not save, but to, you know, cause less damage to her stardom. Mm-hmm. So that's for me, like, that's kind of my take on the ending. And I know some other people have different takes on the ending. Some people don't really love the last 15 minutes because of what happens. And I get it. But for me, that's what makes it all the more powerful, is that Allie did everything she could to save Jackson. But, like, you know, but like Sam Elliott's character says in the, at the end there, you know, it's all Jackson's fault. Every bit of it. It's not her fault. This was his personal baggage before he had, or he had that personal baggage before he met her.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's all, I think it's like a lot of different things, and it's all kind of interweaving together. And so, yeah, I definitely agree with what you just said.
Yeah. And yeah, oh, I forgot to, while I was thinking about it, I forgot to mention Sam Elliott.
Oh yeah, he did, he was in it less than I was expecting, but I thought he was impactful whenever he was on screen.
Mm-hmm. I thought he would be only in one scene. Like, I don't know why, but I only thought he would be in the one scene where, like, he comes up to where, you know, him, the one scene I thought that would happen where he was there was, you know, just like a 10-minute bit where him and Allie, or Allie and Jackson, like, go up to his house and visit him, and he kind of disagrees with what Allie's doing or something, and then there's a kerfuffle, and then that's the end of Sam Elliott's character for the movie. But no, he's in it a lot more.
I went into it not knowing he was going to be Jackson Maine's brother. I was expecting him to be sort of like a mentor figure to either Jackson or Allie in some capacity. I really didn't expect him. Another thing I thought of, like, as it went on, like, I didn't, before they revealed that he was Jackson's brother, was I thought he was just like the manager, you know? Like, I thought he was just someone that worked frequently with Jackson, and they had that rapport, and he was going to be a supporting presence throughout in that capacity. I didn't know he was going to have the familial connection.
Yeah. I didn't know it until, like, after, like, when I started reading a couple of the reviews. That was the only time I knew. But even then, I didn't know it was going to be such a huge capacity, because I thought it was going to be just a short bit, but I mean, Sam Elliott, like, in every scene, gives it. I mean, the last, like, scene he has with Cooper, again, it's, you know, you just, like, that, his face, like, he doesn't, like, Elliott didn't have to say anything, but Elliott's face, like, after, like, dropping Cooper off at his house, I mean, just says so much, you know, like, it just says so much about, like, everything that he's gone through his whole life, and having to go through, you know, however many years Jackson's been alive, and having to, like, basically live with the fact that, you know, his dad in his 60s had another kid, and he has always had to deal with his kid brother, and all this, like, all that weight, like, finally almost collapses before he can get out of the driveway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just really good. And, but A Star Is Born, like, it's a really interesting drama that I think it has more in its layers. Like, it is the same, it probably is the same story as the other three versions, but I think there's more layers, but I think Cooper adds more layers and has something more to say about depression and how it relates to relationships, with people. And, you know, and also how does that relate into the big scheme of things, which is, you know, stardom. So I think Cooper really, you know, dragged a line, or drew a very good line to make, you know, this version his own.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have any more to say on Stars Born?
Not that I can think of, unless you're thinking of taking the conversation in any other area.
I don't know where else to go other than Lady Gaga was great.
Yeah.
Could he use more Dave Chappelle?
Oh yeah, I was expecting him to be more in it more as well. I didn't think he would be in that one quick scene or two.
Yeah, I thought he would be more of the mentor figure, but I guess not. But yeah, I mean, this is a really well-made movie, and I'm over the moon. I don't know if it'll be in my top 10, or I don't know if it currently, I don't remember what I put in my top 10, but it's a really great movie, and I'm happy that people are checking out and seeing it.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's pretty cool to see it perform so well at the box office, in spite of Venom.
We are Venom.
Yeah, I mean, it's all our faults that Venom is so successful.
Oh yeah, I'm so sick of Venom, like, already. Like, I can't, so many things to say.
we'll keep trucking along.
Yeah.
So,
something that you'd be all right. It's the first time I'm worried about you.
Can I ask you a personal question?
Okay.
Tell me something, girl.
Do you write songs or anything?
I don't sing my own songs.
Why?
I just don't feel comfortable.
Why wouldn't you feel comfortable?
Almost every single person has told me they liked the way I sounded, but that they didn't like the way I look.
I think you're beautiful.
David, you saw First Man.
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Be an Avenger.
First man to walk on the moon. That'd be something.
We've chosen a job so difficult, requiring so many technological developments. We're gonna have to start from scratch.
Yes, I saw it Friday evening.
What did you think?
I loved it. It's currently tied as my favorite of the year with Mission Impossible Fallout. I went into it already a huge fan of Chazelle because La La Land's one of my favorite films, and then I think Whiplash is great. But I liked it so much more than I thought I would, because to a degree I was kind of expecting a more conventional biopic, but I really liked the spin and angle Chazelle and Josh Singer put on examining Neil Armstrong's life by focusing so much on his family as well as all the space stuff. And then whenever they go up into space, like the way that they it's just so different from most other space exploration films, where it's much more cinematic in a way. In the sense that, like, you normally see, like, the exterior shots of the rocket as they blast off, and you don't stay in that claustrophobic environment with the crew as they take off normally. And I thought that was one interest. Like, it just, like, it hammers home the idea that this wasn't easy to accomplish, and, like, these astronauts were at risk, at high risk. And, like, I think that was very fascinating, and I love this film so much.
For me, when I first saw Whiplash, I thought it was a really good movie, although I do not care about jazz, so for a little while I kind of held that against it, even though I still gave it a really good review. Like, I don't care about jazz. In fact, the music that they were all playing in that room sounded like garbage. So, you know, joke's on you, Fletcher. But the more I sat with Whiplash and the more, you know, I let it sink in, Whiplash is now like my favorite movie of this decade. Like it's,
wow.
I mean, it is so perfect and it represents so much of basically the struggle of becoming an art, of trying to become an artist today, where you look at everything there is now available in platforms. And even when you sit and think about all of the different ways anything can get distributed or anyone can break out there, but there's still the problem of how do you branch out and become the next big thing?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I feel like Whiplash is the perfect commentary for that because, you know, do you like what method of getting in is the better way? Like what method, like, and is there, you know, a way and is the way of, you know, going about like being an artist and then struggle and then, you know, having a drug addiction, is that the way to go? Is that all these different ideas? And on top of that, it's a well-crafted, well-edited movie. And looks great, even though they shot it on like different like Canon DSLRs and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So I really loved Whiplash, and then La La Land, same thing. I really loved it, even though it didn't kind of quite connect with me the first time. But then the second time I saw it, I was like emotionally in tears at the end of the movie because I like finally had got what the movie was going for in that final ending.
Mm-hmm.
And for First Man, I really like this movie, but it's still currently my favorite. But it's still like my least favorite of the Giselles. But then again, I'm looking forward to seeing this movie in IMAX this week. Oh, so
an IMAX is incredible.
That's the thing. At our promo screening, we did not see this in IMAX. We just saw it like standard. But even then, I was like impressed.
Yeah, I specifically chose not to go out of my way to go to a screening because I wanted to wait to see it in IMAX. And then I was really disappointed when the Thursday night IMAX screenings were occupied by Venom. So another reason that I have a grudge with it. So yeah, in IMAX, there's only the moon landing sequence, I believe, is in the full screen IMAX, but the sound and picture is just extraordinary.
And they used almost every different kind of film format imaginable except for 8mm and like regular 65 or Panavision 65mm. Everything mm-hmm. else they used four prefer for 35mm, and then they used super 16mm for most of the movie, and then the moon sequences they shot in full 15x70 IMAX, 70mm IMAX.
Mm-hmm.
And even in standard viewing, you still could tell a difference in like formats. Like that's how wonderful but it never took you out of the movie.
Yeah, definitely. Up to that point, and like anything not on the moon was like the film, like it really got that grainy like film quality to it, you know, that it was just like it mm-hmm. made it seem more authentic to the time period. I mean, it's just like that nice touch.
Yeah, well, I mean, it gives you an old movie look. Gives you that old, but without like having to gloss over, but without the gloss and the perfect, you know, in the perfect like, you know, perfect amount of film pixels mm-hmm. that you just it absolutely kind of has all that grain and just less pixelated. Like it feels like they got the film stock from the 70s.
Yeah, definitely.
And it looks fantastic all the way through. And the way I knew that this movie would be really good and really understood how dangerous and high risk everything would be is in that first scene where Ryan Gosling essentially makes it up to space. Like he but he does such a good job making it up to space. He almost flows out of Earth's orbit.
Yeah, that really took me by surprise because I was like, oh wow, this happened.
Yeah.
That's insane. Like you always look back on it like growing up, like hearing, like reading it in like the history books or like seeing it in like a documentary, it's not really stressed how intense these situations were really. Like, I mean, like you obviously hear, you read and hear things about like the explosions anytime there was like a failed launch, like the Apollo 1 in this film, or like say for instance, like the Challenger, even though that's far in the future, far flung in the future. Just like you always know of like those sacrifices, but you never really think about how difficult it was and all the risk associated with it until you actually are immersed into the middle of it, you know?
Right. Well, and also the movie painstakingly goes through every challenge or most of as many of the challenges as it could to show you just to do little things was, you know, like just getting it into the Earth, out of Earth's orbit was a challenge. And then staying up there without burning up or freezing to death or, you know, running out of oxygen or having a fire. And then the thing blows up because there's oxygen everywhere. I mean, it's insane. It's insane how dangerous it was, but we get to see as much of it as possible. And most importantly, we never leave the subject. We rarely leave the subjectivity of Neil Armstrong.
Yes. That's what I really loved is that, like, even though it's very, like, even though Gosling's putting forward like a very understated introspective performance, like you still glean everything from it that he's feeling, and you get that sense of intensity and like his personal grief and all of that, despite his internalized emotions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the thing I will say about the movie that I really love the most is I love how it captures that Americana family that, you know, that the Armstrongs have. It captures what that family dynamic was like for them. But in the inside, you see like they're struggling. Like they're struggling to keep it together because of the stress of, you know, the moon launch. They're, you know, also dealing with mild spoilers. But this is in the first 10 minutes. They're dealing with the grief of, you know, losing their daughter to cancer. And on top of that, like you see how each of them would react, and they are acting actually pretty natural to how they would act at the time. I mean, Neil Armstrong is very much, you know, trying to be very, you know, stoic and standguarded, and very much like he's trying to very much be, you know, be beside himself. He's trying to, you know, be guarded the whole time. You know, he has to be strong for not only his family, but he has to be strong for NASA and the Apollo missions, even though people around him are literally dying. Like his neighbor is dying. So he has to be strong, and that's for me what makes Ryan Gosling's performance compelling, is that you can see little glimpses of the humanity of him reacting to, you know, to everyone around him risking their lives and dying, and what, you know, the death of his daughter has done to him and his wife. But in the end, he still has to be stoic and guarded about everything he does and says.
Yeah, definitely. For me, it's the best lead actor performance of the year, and what I'm currently rooting for best actor.
Yeah, I mean, I know we just gushed over Cooper like 10 minutes ago, but still.
Yeah, like I literally saw like Star is Born like a week before I saw before I saw First Man, and like when I saw that, I was like, okay, this is the best lead performance of this is the best leading actor performance of the year. Like, this is incredible. And then what he did director wise and everything, and then a week later for it to be like topped already for me, like I was like blindsided by that.
Yeah, I am impressed by the two performances we have right now. And I mean, and it's just early October. Like, it's October 15th as of this recording. So we still have a lot going on.
Okay.
In the next, so we have a lot going on in the next few weeks, or not really few weeks, the next few months.
Yeah, next 2 months or so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but also I feel we would be doing a disservice if we didn't mention Claire Foy.
Oh, yeah. I thought we were going to get to her. So glad you brought that up. She was excellent as well. I think her role could have easily become cliche if the screenplay hadn't serviced her as well as it did. And Foy could have easily come off as like just like the typical homebound mother, you know, that kind of like doting wife, that kind of archetype. And yeah. I think thanks to Foy and Joss Singer, it doesn't like it. They really like elevated what could have been a standard archetype.
Well, you're seeing, well, the most interesting part is you're seeing the flip side, you know, while Neil is preparing to go to the moon.
What she has to sacrifice, the personal sacrifice of the homestead, you know, like that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, while, you know, while he's going to the moon, she's basically having to be at home and be mother and be reminded that of every day that, you know, okay, my husband can die. I lost my daughter and my husband can die any day.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I mean, that's a lot bearing on a mother, especially a mother of two boys. And you just feel for her in every bit, but you never lose her, but you never lose your respect for her as a woman. Like, she does things that, you know, both you feel for her, but you respect her in every regard, and you root for her in every regard. Like, you're rooting for her when the monitors get, the radios get shut off because they're afraid that, you know, she'll, you know, hear her husband die or something. Mm-hmm. But there is a strength to her that allows her, you know, no, I need to hear what's going on. I can take it. And on top of that, you have like thousands of dozens of reporters at my doorstep, like wanting to know how I feel about my husband almost dying in space.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a very well interwoven, you know, wife character. And on top of that, you're seeing like how she is dealing with the grief, and to, you know, and to add even more to the, you know, to the ending of it all, how they both have handled their, you know, their grief with their daughter ends with this symbolic ending with the quarantine center, where they're both on different sides of a plexiglass. And it's brilliant. It's brilliant because you know that, you know, one of them has went on this incredible emotional and journey to where he can, you know, emotionally like forgive himself and let go of his daughter, you know, and the other had this completely other journey, and now they're at two different places while also being in the same room.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. It's like that's really what I loved about this movie the most, is the symbology of the ending of it.
Yeah, definitely. And then like learning later that they divorced later in life, kind of like makes it hit home that much more.
Oh, like, I didn't even know they got divorced.
I found that out like yesterday, and I was just like, oh, wow.
That now that ending makes even more sense.
Mm-hmm.
like it even hits even harder because you see like, oh, okay. Now, yeah, that works. Cause they both went on an emotional journey to overcome their daughter's death, and they did it in different ways, and now they're separated.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah, that's great. Way to go, Damien Chazelle. This guy's like not even that much older than us, and he's a brilliant genius.
Oh my gosh. He's quickly become one of my favorite working directors today, and one of my favorite in like just period.
Yeah, I really like Damien Chazelle. I think, God, that man is brilliant. Like, please don't peak too early. Please don't peak early.
I'm looking forward to anything he does from now on out.
Yeah. I hope he has a career as fruitful as Scorsese or Spielberg.
I can see that. Him and Ryan Coogler, I think I can see that.
Oh my gosh.
They're both 3 for 3 at such a young age.
I know. That's incredible. Oh my gosh. Well, here's the interesting part about Coogler. I mean, Coogler went on even a much more smarter route, or maybe it's debatable which is smarter, but I mean, Coogler went on to make a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
And revitalized.
More commercialized. Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas Chazelle, I mean, technically La La Land and First Man are commercial films. Like they're like in their own technical way. But Chazelle, like he's pretty much made, now that he's done 3 movies in a row that were just hit after, well, critical hits. Screw you, Venom, for basically making, you know, a $60 million movie bomb.
Yeah.
And another really great movie that opened this weekend bomb.
Yeah, Bad Times.
Yeah. I'm not angry at all, Sony. No, I'm not.
I'm definitely harboring some resentment.
Yeah, and I already hated Venom.
Yeah, I already thought it was an awful movie. Enjoyable trash in that sense, but this all this stuff compounding made me like, I already dislike it more and more every waking moment.
But in a way, it's still our fault because we went to see it.
Yeah.
I still pay $10 to see the movie, so.
True. True, true, true.
Yeah. Anyway, so congrats, Damien Chazelle. Honestly, what I think of Chazelle nowadays is he's pretty much now bought his meal ticket. Because,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, First Man, like, it's not a big hit. It's not the big hit that La La Land was. But
he's an Academy Award winning director, so he's gonna find work.
Yes. It might not be as ambitious as First Man or a Marvel movie or any kind of big budget movie, but I think he now has he now has the power to write his own path. And I think that's the best mark of a director, is that if you can have full power to write, kind of do whatever you want from here on out for the rest of your career. I think Chazelle has proven without a doubt, him and Coogler and maybe Ava DuVernay at this point.
Yeah, a wrinkle in time. No, just kidding.
Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. But I mean, still, she's still...
She's still, everything else she's done. Yeah.
And she's still working.
I get what you're saying.
Well, yeah, I mean, she is still working. I think she's filming some series on Netflix right now, but I don't know much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, all these really great young filmmakers, they have, you know, they've written their own ticket, and they didn't have to make... Well, I mean, Coogler, of course, but I mean, they didn't have to like jump from a Sundance movie to a big budget movie.
Mm-hmm.
that's what kind of gives me hope about Chazelle and Coogler and DuVernay and JC Chandler. That's what gives me hope, is that they don't have to make, you know, they don't have to make a big budget movie out of the gate to prove themselves. They just have to make really good movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just, that's what gives me hope for the future, because we need more mid-range budget movies.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm really rooting hard for Creed 2, because that's going to be like a $40 million movie, and we need more movies like that, that are like, that'll write, give directors more leeway, or more, you know, directors a middle ground than The Amazing Spider-Man or Van Forstick or...
Yeah.
I like this movie, but even more than Godzilla.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. What else is there to say about First Man?
I mean, it's all brilliant. I mean, Hurwitz's score is, just gorgeous. Like, it's outstanding. The moon landing sequence was like breathtaking. I teared up even before he had that personal moment. Like just them landing on the moon, just like that sense of accomplishment, like throughout everything they went to, all those obstacles and everything, just like they finally like achieving it. Like even though you know it's going to happen because it's history, just like witnessing it after experiencing this 2-hour journey or so. It just was really emotionally fulfilling for me.
It's well earned, and it helps that Justin Hurwitz, this is his only, like, he only exclusively works with Chazelle at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Which really, really, Hollywood, can we not get Hurwitz to do something else? Work with some other directors?
I mean, if someone approaches him, that's, I mean, I say it's up to him. Maybe if he wants to.
Oh, sure.
I think he just, like, he has that good relation. Like, they were roommates, I believe, in college or something like that. And they just have that really good dynamic and relationship. I mean, he's gotten two Oscars out of it already with La La Land for song and score. So it's mm-hmm. been a fruitful relationship for him. I don't see him... he might work. He'll probably work with other filmmakers eventually, but I think he'll stick to Chazelle for a while.
Yeah, but going to Hurwitz's score, I love the land. There's this. It's now on YouTube. All of Hurwitz's score is on YouTube now. But my favorite cue from that whole movie is the landing, and the reason why I love it is it's action. It's intense. But it also is, you know, is very symbolic of the entire movie itself, because it starts very, you know, I don't know if melancholy is the right word, but it starts very much like very soft. And then it gets gradually more and more and more intense until like the last 20 seconds, and then it kind of fades off. And yeah, that's
crescendos to
mm-hmm. Yeah, it crescendos like in the last 20-30 seconds, and then it goes off, and it really is like emotional. It's uplifting. It's like a combination of feels, and it works so well with the movie, because you feel like everything else in the movie, everything has been building up to it. It's mm-hmm. been a slow and gradual build, but everything is built to it.
Yeah.
So... awesome. So really good score. I loved it. It was just great. Great all around. Is there more to say on First Man?
I think we've kind of hit all the bases that I can think of.
I think so too. Please go check it out. It's a really good, please. That's all I got to say. Go check it out. It's a really great movie. I will see it before. So let me ask this. Does Halloween come out on IMAX this weekend or no?
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if it did. So, I mean, if you're going to see it again in IMAX, you probably need to see it before Thursday. But I'm not sure if that's the case.
That's so frustrating. Let me check real quick. No, it's not. We're good.
Okay.
Yeah, we're all right. It will be an RPX, so... Well, that's interesting. Well, I say it isn't, but then at my theater, they're stopping the First Man shows and IMAX at 3:40, so I don't know.
Huh.
Yeah, sorry, what?
I'm looking at my theater.
I don't think there is. Hang on. So we're just looking real quick.
Mine doesn't even have all their show times up for Thursday, so I have no idea.
I don't know. But yeah, if you are going to see this in IMAX or really Dolby Cinema or RPX or any of that, I would say see it before the week is out because this is an incredible movie. And even more incredible, watch it for the sound. Like, go to a movie theater with great sound and watch it there. Because, I mean, it really is an immersive, like I know we were talking about A Star Is Born is going to get nominated. This is going to take all the categories. Or most of them, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like this is just that kind of movie that will just take a great deal of, you know, it could easily be nominated for 10 Oscars.
Yeah, I see this being kind of the Dunkirk of this year's award season. In regards to picking up a bunch of technical craft noms. But I think it'll also garner some acting as well, possibly for Foy and Gosling. And for picture, for sure.
Yep. So with that, David, do you want to talk about film assessment?
Sure. Film assessment is my blog where I review films. If you want to check it out, film assessment is the handle for just about every social media there is, and you can get the URL to my blog from there. And then my personal Twitter, my personal handle for my other social media is wiser_David. So that's all I have to plug.
Awesome. So as far as podcasts are, for sure, I don't know if we'll do a podcast on Bad Times at El Royale, but please go and see Bad Times at El Royale. David, you said you watched it too?
Yes, I enjoyed it quite a bit. I saw it Thursday because I couldn't see First Man. I was going to see it either way eventually, but I saw it earlier because of the First Man not being shown in IMAX Thursday. I decided to see Bad Times instead.
I did likewise. I was going to see it like Thursday or Friday in IMAX, but then Friday became the one day I could go and see a movie, and I wanted to see Bad Times because I'd already seen First Man like 2 weeks ago. So I saw Bad Times, and it's a great film. Great, compelling, like, really just, like, it's one of the best movies of the year. Like, it is a starfire hit, and I wished it would have done better at the box office.
Yeah, especially since it was one of the only original movies to open this month, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish it would have done better. Yeah, original, and I wish it would have done better. And also, I wish it would have done better because I really want Drew Goddard to do more work, and eventually, and I hope he still gets to do X-Force. So,
yeah, that's a big question mark, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be a big question mark if we didn't have the Disney merger.
Yeah, that's why I was saying it.
But I really hope, you know, once Drew Goddard gets like full into X-Force mode, I really hope that Ryan Reynolds like just gets behind Drew Goddard's script or material, and that movie gets made, because that's really now pretty much the only reason that movie gets made is because Ryan Reynolds wants to get it made.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so with that said, that was a long way to getting to my Twitter handles. You can follow me on Twitter at MovieKale. You can also follow this show at The Youth Critic, and you can also follow the channel that distributes this podcast at KHC Network. Thanks, everyone. We will be back with you soon with either Bad Times at El Royale or the review for Halloween. Thanks, David, for coming on. It was great, great having you on. We'll have you on. We would like to have you on again soon.
Yeah, no problem. I enjoyed doing this. I haven't really guested on a podcast before, so this was something new.
Nice. All right, we will see you all next week.
I think you're beautiful.
Hey.
What?
I just want to take another look at you.
In all the good times, I find myself longing for change.
Here's what we're going to do.
Come sing that song
that I love.
No, I can't do that.
Here we go.
Jack, it's not funny.
Jack. Look at me.
All you got to do is trust me. That's all you got to do.
We're far from the shallow.